live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Woo! It's up!
Ice cream.
Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Gasparian. Is this post Justice Day? Well, that doesn't sound that great. But justice has arrived. let's put it that way. All right. We have news, obviously, and some of it involves disgusting Republicans. It's an interesting way of pronouncing it. And I'm going to read you guys some reactions to my book, which I found to be interesting, but we'll do that throughout the show. It'll be fun for everybody. And I will take your reactions. That's why I wanted to mention up top in the comment section as well, if some of you have begun to read it. Okay, Casper, let's get started.
Well, let's begin with some bombshell allegations by Cassidy Hutchinson in her upcoming book. Let's discuss. Former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, who served as a critical witness during the January 6th investigations, is now alleging that Rudy Giuliani sexually assaulted her on January 6th. So she details these allegations in her memoir as a 27-year-old titled Enough. It's coming out next week. And we hadn't heard of these allegations until today, after The Guardian got an advanced copy of the book and noticed this portion of it and reported on it. So in the book, she writes that, "I find Rudy in the back of the tent with, among others, John Eastman, the corners of his mouth split into a Cheshire cat smile. Waving a stack of documents, he moves toward me like a wolf closing in on its prey." Okay, so he approaches her. This is basically backstage during Donald Trump's speech on January 6th. "We have the evidence. It's all here. We're going to pull this off. Rudy wraps one arm around me or my body, closing the space that was separating us. I feel his stack of documents press into the small of my back. I lower my eyes and watch his free hand reach for the hem of my blazer. By the way," he says, fingering the fabric, "I'm loving this leather jacket on you." His hand slips underneath my blazer, then my skirt. And then it gets even more creepy when you consider who was there, who saw it, and what she alleges happened next. "I feel his frozen fingers trail up my thigh. He tilts his chin up. The whites of his eyes look jaundiced. My eyes dart to Trump advisor John Eastman, who flashes a leering grin. I fight against the tension in my muscles and recoil from Rudy's grip. Filled with rage, I storm through the tent on yet another quest for Mark," referencing Mark Meadows, who she served as an assistant to during the Trump White House. So considering some of the other allegations that have come out in regard to Rudy Giuliani and his sexual misconduct, I'm inclined to lean in the direction of believing what she's saying here. And what I'm referring to is his former employee, Noel Dunphy, who actually had recordings of him saying some pretty heinous things to her, sexually charged things about her, you know, body parts and things like that. And so she's actually pressing charges against him as a result of that. But Cenk, I'm curious what you think about the allegations, but also the fact that these are allegations from 2.5 years ago that we only know about now because they're published in her book.
Yeah, so I'll get to the timing in a second. First, as to whether it's believable or not. It's unfortunately very believable, although it sounds super shocking to the rest of us. Like that, really? You're gonna have like these creepy old men putting their hands up the skirt of who at the time Cassidy was probably 25. Of a 25-year-old girl, and remember, this is a part of family values. Oh, come here, morality, values, etc. She shows up thinking, "Oh my God, and we can't wait to help with family values." And this guy's like, and then reaches up. So it seems like unbelievable. Like if you put it in a movie, you're like, really? On the other hand, we saw Rudy with the young girl in that, you know, was it a Borat movie?
I think so.
Borat 2. That's right. And we covered that story for you guys too. And then the other woman who worked for him, I want to show
Noelle Dunphy.
Yeah, Noelle Dunphy's quotes here are pretty devastating. According to her, now so this is now number of people, including some that we've seen on tape, right? And they say that they have this on tape as well. And then we're going to find out in Dunphy's lawsuit. But I can't say the T word for breasts, but every time I say breasts, I understand that's what he apparently actually said. He said, "Come here, big breasts. Come on here, big breasts. Your breasts belong to me." And it goes on and on and on about how he owns them and how he can do anything he wants to them. And that's a person who works for him. I mean, it is sexual harassment on steroids. Mm-hmm. And so these guys are disgusting. They're absolutely disgusting. And apparently they got away with this at such an industrial scale that they're not even hesitating in doing it.
So let's get to the reaction from, or the response from the individuals that she names in the book, both Giuliani and John Eastman, who she alleges was there as the assault was taking place. So first, a Giuliani spokesperson and a political advisor to Giuliani. Bro, if you're a political advisor, it's time to quit. But anyway, Ted Goodman puts out a statement. "It's fair to ask Cassidy Hutchinson why she is just now coming out with these allegations from 2.5 years ago as part of the marketing campaign for upcoming book release. This is a disgusting lie against Mayor Rudy Giuliani." So on one hand, I believe her. I think that Rudy Giuliani is a terrible person for a litany of reasons, having to do with, you know, his attempts to overturn the election, his public behavior, just all sorts of stuff that he's engaged in. How he treated Noelle Dunphy based on the evidence she says that she has on tape. So this isn't a knock on what she is alleging, but I do think that it is not a good look when you withhold this information from the public for 2.5 years and keep it for your book. And the reason why I say that, the reason why I have a higher bar or higher standard when it comes to these types of specific allegations is because between then and now, how many women found themselves, you know, associated with Giuliani who maybe would have wanted to know about what you experienced? How many women did he prey on between then and now that could have been warned ahead of time? That's the only reason why I'm concerned about it. And yeah, it looks terrible. It looks like she held on to it specifically for her book in order to make her book something that's, you know, more sellable, more interesting, something that people might want to actually buy and read. And this is how the publishing world works. Let's keep it real. It is how it works. They want something salacious. They want something juicy. They want the gossip. They want the drama. So this is the selling point, and congratulations, it's maybe gonna help her sell her memoir. But at the same time, there are actual ramifications to withholding this information from the public. I understand when victims of sexual assault or rape don't want to come out to the public or don't want to report it to the authorities, because we've seen how women are treated, how people are treated when they come out with these types of allegations. But that wasn't the reason why she withheld the information from the public for 2.5 years. She withheld it because she wanted to publish it in her book.
Yeah, well, look, I think you're generally right about the publication world, and I obviously just had experience with it, and I gotta say, based on what, you know, the other stories that I've heard and seen, I'm really lucky. So St. Martin's Press is the folks who handled my book that just came out, and I had some stuff in there that was, you know, you can call it gossipy, you can call it whatever you want, but it was behind the scenes stuff that I thought was important to share. I've since shared that on the show, but they actually asked me to take it out, not because they didn't want it in there, but they were like, "Look, you got a really good book that is about the movement and it's not about you. Let's stick with that, and I think that it'll be a better message." And I was shocked at how moral they were, right? And because I know that that little piece would have gotten, you know, buzz in Washington, etc. And so, but when you have something like that, it is shocking. Because mostly Anna's right in this publication world. People are like, give me dirt, give me dirt. And in fact, that also unfortunately creates a little bit more doubt into some things that go into books. Because you wonder, did you put it in there so that people would buzz about it and talk about it, etc. Now, in this case, since Rudy has a colorful history of these type of sexual harassments, assaults, etc. And given his sorry state of mind, it's her allegations are not as surprising and shocking as they should be. But I do agree with Anna, of course, on the timing. This is not a thing where, hey, I disagreed with someone behind the scenes on strategy. This is a serious issue. And you don't let a predator like that walk around without warning people, hey, watch out, don't be in a room alone with this guy. He did this when he wasn't alone in the room, when there was tons of people. I mean, that's the famous January 6th Trump speech, they're backstage. Mm-hmm. That's what I found amazing. So not only does he do that in full sight of everyone, so that gives you a sense of like the entire team back there is mental. Like they see this creepy old man reach underneath a 25-year-old girl's skirt. While, by the way, they're giving public speeches about groomers and all that stuff, right? And not only do none of them react, none of them protect her. Jesus, conservatives, you ought to be embarrassed.
So John Eastman was allegedly in the room or in the area as it was happening.
What I'm getting to.
So he's denying it. I have a statement from his spokesperson in just a moment.
Right, but according to Hutchinson, Eastman looked at her and gave like a little evil grin.
Disgusting.
Like you would think, like if imagine someone's Rudy is doing that to you, whether you're a guy or girl. Imagine he's going for your, he's got his hand on your thigh inside your clothes, and you look over for help, and the other creepy guy's like, you're like, oh my God, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with these people? Now again, it's Hutchinson's version of the story. So now we'll give you his, I'm sure, denial, Eastman's.
So Charles Burnham, a lawyer for Eastman, categorically denied Hutchinson's account, and in a statement to CNN called the accusations libelous. In his statement, he said that Eastman, quote, does not recall ever having met Ms. Hutchinson and did not even know who she was until her public testimony before the Select Committee in the House of Representatives in June of 2022. That was the House Select Committee investigating January 6th, in which Hutchinson served as a witness for. And her testimony was incredibly important. She shed light on many things that the public did not know about what was happening behind the scenes when it came to attempts to essentially steal the election or overturn the results of the election and what happened on January 6th. So I don't, aside from sharing the details of what she's alleging in her book, I don't know what we're supposed to do with this information, right? Because she didn't go to the authorities for it. She went to Mark Meadows. So I'd like some journalists to maybe reach out to Mark Meadows and ask him, so did you know about this? Did she really reach out to you? What happened on that day? What do you know? Especially when she's now being threatened with like defamation lawsuits, right? But I don't know for sure. No one can know for sure. I can only tell you what I suspect and where I lean on the issue. I believe her. But at the same time, I just think it would have been helpful to other people to, you know, have that warning 2.5 years ago when the incident happened.
Yeah, and just guys, like I think part of the warning is be careful. People are not who they appear to be in public, especially politicians. And so this is now how many stories in a row of Republicans or conservatives who talk about values and then behind the scenes do massive sexual harassment in the workplace. So, but when you hear them talking about how they view women's rights as secondary, be careful, they might mean it. And it looks like a lot of times they do mean it in their personal lives.
All right, let's move on. We've got an update on the Congress's failed attempts to pass a government spending or funding bill. So let's get to that.
This is not conservative republicanism. This is stupidity. The idea that we're going to shut the government down when we don't control the Senate, we don't control the White House. These people can't define a win. They don't know how to take yes for an answer. It's a clown show. You keep running lunatics, you're going to be in this position.
That was a Republican congressman, Mike Lawler from New York, essentially calling out members of his own party for the way they've been behaving and their fails in attempting to pass a government funding bill. Now, the far right House Freedom Caucus is basically proving to be a bit of a political liability for the Republican parties on this very issue. The party is fractured on the legislation. And so let's give you an update on what happened this week so far. So look, unless Congress pass and the White House agree to a resolution to fund the federal government beyond September 30th, it will shut down on October 1st. So time is of the essence. They always wait until the last minute to actually take this seriously. But here we are, they haven't come up with an agreement. And regardless of whether Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, agrees to what the more conservative wing of the Republican Party wants, it is very unlikely that that version of the bill will get passed by the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats. Now, with that said, on Tuesday, Speaker McCarthy canceled a procedural vote on a spending proposal after it became clear that the measure did not have the adequate Republican support to pass. Separately, a bill to fund the Department of Defense failed a procedural test on Tuesday when five Republicans voted in opposition. Now, the temporary stopgap bill proposed Sunday would have triggered a 1% cut to current fiscal levels, but keep the government funded until October 31st, basically buying them some time to negotiate a more long-term bill. Even if the measure had made it out of the House, it was expected to be rejected in the Senate. So the, you know, far right wing of the Republican Party seems to be a little delusional about what they can actually accomplish, because whether they want to accept it or not, Democrats do control the Senate. And if they're planning on passing through a spending bill that would essentially provide no aid to Ukraine and cuts to funding for the Department of Justice so they can provide cover for Donald Trump, it's not gonna work out. The Senate is gonna send that bill back and say, no, we're not gonna pass that. So it's a mess, and I don't know what's gonna happen moving forward. But currently there are at least 15 House Republicans who are opposed to the spending legislation that was on offer in the House, that 1 month stopgap bill. And given the GOP's 221 to 212 majority, that is more than enough to essentially tank it. So Kevin McCarthy is in a little bit of trouble here. And what do the hard right Republicans want exactly? Like, that's the big question, right? And one of the most vociferous among them is Representative Matt Gaetz, who claims that what he wants is very clear. Let's watch.
We can't blame Joe Biden and the Democrats for why the Republican-controlled House of Representatives hasn't passed single-subject spending bills. That's our fault. So we have to deal with that. We will likely have to endure some degree of a shutdown.
So he does have a little bit of a point when it comes to the single-subject spending bills. So the government is funded through 12 annual appropriations bills, each of which funds a different part of the federal government. In recent years, some or all of these 12 bills have been rolled into a single omnibus package and approved together. Apparently, you know, Matt Gaetz and the House Freedom Caucus had received some promises from Kevin McCarthy that he would pursue the single issue bills. And clearly that's not the case when it comes to the government funding bill. But as you're about to hear from Mitch McConnell in the Senate, he's the Senate minority leader. Listen, if you're using this debate as a way of getting policy done, I got news for you. Let's watch.
I think all of you know I'm not a fan of government shutdowns. I've seen a few of them over the years. They never have produced a policy change, and they've always been a loser for Republicans.
They've always been a loser for Republicans. So Cenk, what do you think about this so far?
So first, that Republican Congressman Mike Lawler sounded like me. Wasn't that interesting, the way that he was calling them lunatics and what the hell do you want, etc. I haven't seen Republicans this split in a long time. And part of the reason for that is because they showed up to the theater expecting the regular play, but they got something else entirely. They showed up for Les Mis and got Cats. And so what the hell's going on here? Because normally the way that this play works is the Republicans go, oh, we are going to shut the government down unless you give us extra spending cuts. Which, by the way, they already did. They did it earlier. And it was over the debt ceiling, and then Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden got a deal, and they got spending cuts because that's how the game is played. Biden wants to do the spending cuts too. He just has to play along with this game and then go, oh, I can't believe Kevin McCarthy made me do it, right? And so they shook on it and they had a deal, and it was supposed to go through this issue as well. So there was supposed to be no debt ceiling fight and no government shutdown. And what did the Republicans do? They reneged. Number one, because they're Republicans. You can't trust them at all. These Republican politicians are all uniformly outrageous liars, right? That's why even Republican congressmen are calling the rest of the Republicans lunatics now, because that's who they are. So now that regular play got interrupted by these insane demands. Hey, I want the entire Department of Justice defunded. What? Okay, I want the Pentagon stop being woke. What does that even mean, right? So why are they doing this is the natural question.
Because when the government doesn't get the spending bill or the funding bill passed, they don't have to worry about their salaries being on the line. And I think their salaries should be on the line.
Oh, of course.
I think the number one thing that should happen every time they play games with this legislation, which is literally every year.
Every year.
I'm so sick of the same story every freaking year. The press loves it. They love the drama, right? Yeah. This story's been brewing for like a few weeks now, and I didn't want to cover it until this week because you don't need to know every minor update to the story because nothing is serious. They don't take the job seriously. They don't take any of it seriously, right? Oh, national parks will get defunded. Who cares? Oh, people who need food stamps aren't going to be able to access the service as a result of the government not being funded. Who cares? No, I care. A lot of people care. A lot of Americans care. They work their asses off, they pay their taxes, and they expect you to do your damn jobs. And since they're not willing to do their damn jobs, how about your salaries are on the line? How about there is a freeze on your salaries until you do your goddamn jobs and pass the legislation? How about that?
And I'll add one more thing to it. First of all, Anna's idea is indisputable. Of course, they won't do it because it's their salaries. They'll cut your salaries, but not their own. But I would say, not only freeze their salaries, but every day that they are in a government shutdown, they never get that money back, right? Because sometimes the salaries are frozen, then they get a lump sum at the end. No lump sum for you, no cookies for you. You're not showing up to work, you're not getting paid. That's what the average American worker has to deal with. That's what these scummy politicians should have to deal with. Okay, so but to finish my thought, the reason why the script is different now is because the far right is doing tons of grassroots fundraising. So unfortunately, now that's a good thing overall, okay, because you don't want it coming from corporations, etc. You want it coming from the grassroots. But unfortunately, that makes them desperate for attention. Anything to do with attention so they can send an email going, I've been attacked by Kevin McCarthy, I've been attacked by Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, etc. So then they get to raise more money, get more attention. The point is, is the attention itself, the drama itself. The point isn't something that they actually want.
Bingo.
That's why you can't solve it, because they don't actually want anything. So for example, if Matt Gaetz stuck with that one issue and said, well, look, they said that we would vote on these bills individually. And by the way, that's a totally fair ask.
Agreed.
Look at us being fair. That's the right wing asking for that. And it's fair.
And he was promised that. To be fair, in addition to being fair about the whole point of single issue bills, he was promised that, right? In the whole debt ceiling fight, McCarthy said, listen, if you play ball, if you cooperate, Matt Gaetz, I'll give you what you want with the single issue bills. But obviously that's not happening. And Gaetz is right to be upset at McCarthy reneging on that promise. So I give him credit for that. But that is not the only thing he is claiming to want. He wants things that are literally delusional and undoable.
Yeah, and guys, that's we're telling you, if he just went for that, he'd actually win. And that's why I told progressives, like, go for paid family leave. Then you'll get paid family leave, right? There's a way to insist on something and have reasonable demands that you could actually deliver on, especially if you're right about them. But that's why you see the unreasonable demands, because they don't want to win. They want the attention for as long as possible. For them, that is the win, not the resolution. They don't give a damn about you. The resolution helps you, it doesn't help them. The conflict helps them. That's why you're gonna see tons of media coverage about this, tons of like, oh, what's GoDaddy and what's, we all know what's gonna happen. So right now, there's definitely going to be a shutdown, because they're asking for insane things like, oh, give me the moon and I want it in Matt Gaetz's pocket. If you don't give me the moon in Matt Gaetz's pocket, we're not gonna vote yes. Well, then lunatic, how the hell are we supposed to have a conversation?
You know, what's also really interesting is that the moderates are getting, the moderates within the Republican Party, believe it or not, they do exist to some extent. They're the individuals who won in swing districts, districts that Biden won during the 2020 presidential election. They're concerned about what the House Freedom Caucus is demanding and how it's gonna hurt them politically. And so get a load of this. Some hard right Republicans support lowering the top line budget to about 1.4 trillion, which is below the 1.6 trillion agreed upon by McCarthy and President Joe Biden earlier this year. That was the agreement in the midst of that whole debt ceiling fight, right? However, moderates have said they have no incentive to cut spending further. I never thought I would see a day where Republicans would be on the record saying, no, we actually don't want to cut funding. But in this case, it's the moderate Republicans who ran and won in swing districts, and they see the far right wing of the Republican Party as a political liability. And to be sure, they are a political liability to the moderates. Now, Democrats have ridiculed the idea that they should vote for a lower spending number than what McCarthy and Biden had agreed to back in May, and they're right to feel that way. So House Republicans' push for lowering spending has led them to seek cuts to the IRS, Securities and Exchange Commission, and Consumer Product Safety Commission. Gives you a sense of what the priorities are for these Republicans, right? Anything that benefits ordinary people, they want to cut funding to. Interesting. Now, Democrats have also sharply criticized the proposed cuts to the education budget, which Representative Rosa DeLauro, the top Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, said would lead to 22,000 fewer teachers. And other things that would happen if, when the government doesn't get the funding it needs to continue operating, hundreds of thousands of federal workers will not receive a timely paycheck. Government workers who are considered essential will be forced to work without getting paid. They will get paid later once the legislation finally passes. But these are people who have families, who have mortgages, who have to pay rent. They basically have to put their, you know, livelihoods on the back burner while they keep working, because Congress can't be bothered to do its job. And honestly, take a look at the situation at hand realistically and move forward based on what the facts are. And the facts are, a far right wing government funding bill ain't gonna pass in the Senate. It's just not.
Yeah. Look, these guys, like I said, they don't want it to pass. So at the end of the day, how are they going to actually fund the government? Because at some point, they've got to go forward, right? And last time, if you remember, we had the longest government shutdown. It was 28 days. And the reason it got resolved is because eventually, the air traffic controllers stopped showing up to work because they hadn't gotten paid in about a month. So they're like, well, good luck with the airplanes. We'll see you guys later, okay? And then people panicked, and then they resolved the government shutdown. The reason you need that kind of panic is because Republicans don't care about government workers not getting paid. None of the things that get affected in a shutdown affect the rich at all.
And it doesn't affect them either. So by the way, your salary should be frozen. Yeah. And your, all those sweet, sweet health benefits that you get, frozen.
Oh my God, if you froze their health care benefits while the government is shut down, oh, they will all panic. What if we get sick?
They have no problem essentially putting all, like, How many people are we talking about here? I mean, untold numbers of government workers who literally have to put their livelihoods on the back burner. They don't care about that at all.
So they're never gonna care about those guys. So that's why they have no incentive not to do the shutdown. So at the end of the day, we're gonna have to have an emergency against something like the air traffic controllers. And at that point, probably the Republicans, some portion of the Republicans will vote with some portion of the Democrats to get a bill to go through, because the lunatics are never going to say yes.
When we come back from the break, we have an update on how Donald Trump is polling among Black and Latino voters. Have the indictments had an impact on his support? No. We've got that and more. You don't want to miss it. We'll see you then.
All right, back on TYT, Jen Canana with you guys and Nikki Canning and Hey MJ as well. They just became American Heroes and Young Turks members by hitting the join button below the video on YouTube. You can do likewise at tyt.com/join.
I would like to give some credit to an American hero.
Oh.
At least on a very specific issue.
Oh.
So in regard to our last segment about the government funding, Representative Angie Craig's McCarthy Shutdown Act would make sure lawmakers don't get paid if the federal government closes due to a spending fight. So I love that proposal. It ain't gonna go nowhere, but she's making a point and I'm here for it.
She should go on TV, she should come on here, she should publicize that everywhere. Because I'll tell you what, that'll poll at approximately 98%.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 2% will be Matt Gaetz and his family.
Who's eyeing a run for governor in Florida.
Oh gee, I wonder why he's pulling a look at me, daddy, look at me.
Yeah, 100%. Anyway, let's move on to something pretty awful. And it's coming at a time when there is a migrant crisis. Both people living in these communities and the migrants themselves are dealing with a horrific situation. But nonetheless, this is the kind of a vision that Donald Trump has for immigration. So Donald Trump, of course, is known for posting all sorts of terrible and offensive things on social media. That's not new. But today he decided to post the following in regard to the migrant crisis in the United States. It says, problem solved with a photo of alligators. New border security will work for food. Now it's being passed off as a joke, which I'd be willing to believe, even though it's a disgusting joke at a time when people are really suffering, both the migrants and the local communities that are trying to house the migrants, that everyone is suffering. Congress is doing nothing to reform immigration, completely abandoned. These communities are completely abandoned by the federal government on this specific issue. And this is what Trump puts out into the world about it. And I'd be willing to maybe consider it as just a joke, except for the fact that he literally proposed doing this. Do you remember that, Jake?
Of course I do, you crazy. The snakes, the wires, tell us all
yes,
about
yes. So we actually reported on this back in 2019. And so the New York Times had reported through Michael Shear and Julie Hirschfeld that Trump genuinely thought that doing something like that would be a good idea in controlling immigration. Privately, the president had often talked about fortifying a border wall with a water-filled trench stocked with snakes or alligators, prompting aides to seek a cost estimate. That's how far it went. They decided to look into a cost estimate. He wanted the wall electrified with spikes on top that could pierce human flesh. After publicly suggesting that soldiers shoot migrants if they threw rocks, the president backed off when his staff told him that was illegal. But later in a meeting, aides recalled, he suggested that they shoot migrants in the legs to slow them down. That's not allowed either, they told him.
So if you know Donald Trump, and even if you're a fan of Donald Trump, you know he said those things. And in fact, a lot of the fans of Donald Trump probably think like, good. But don't pretend that that's not the exact kind of thing that Donald Trump would ask. And so, and every time, by the way, there's a report from people inside his own administration, by definition, very right-wing Republicans, Matt goes, I don't believe it, la 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 la. Okay, so guys, innocent joking between each other, no problem. Okay, you want to put this up on Facebook, now you're putting it, making it public. I'm saying if you were to do it, right? You're making it public, it's distasteful, especially because people recently died there, right?
There's kids, yeah, tons of kids.
What Abbott did was, that's the governor of Texas, he started putting barbed wire in the river. So as they were trying to swim around the barbed wire or trying to figure out what to do, bunch of people got washed out, including kids, okay, and died. So you shouldn't do it either. But the former president of the United States, and so the guy who would be in charge of immigration policy, and that earlier was, and that actually seriously considered this inside the White House, he definitely shouldn't be joking around like this. I know that they love that he jokes. I know that. I'm not unaware of that. And the Democrats are too stiff. But are there no bounds of reason? Are there no bounds of decency? I mean, you guys say you're pro-life. A whole bunch of people have died in that river.
Including kids.
Including kids. And you guys are, I mean, are you okay with it? Are you good with it? I know you wanted the barbed wire and all that stuff. I guarantee you a decent percentage of MAGA, if you told them electric fence that would electrocute human beings and alligators and snakes, unfortunately, a big percentage would probably say yes.
Look, and for me, it's not just the cruelty of this specific post that has me irritable and upset. It's that we're dealing with a very real problem, right? Like a problem that is leading to quite a bit of human suffering. And this is an issue that, again, the federal government has completely abandoned. They love to campaign on it. They love to engage in political theater on this issue, but they don't take it seriously. There's no real appetite for immigration reform. There's no appetite in solving the problem, hiring more immigration judges so we can, you know, speed up the process of these asylum hearings. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, they got elected, but were they elected to actually do something beneficial for their constituents? Of course not. It's all a game to them. It's all fun for them. So look, that's more commentary about Congress, because Congress hasn't even really broached the topic since 2014, when attempts to reform immigration fell apart during the Obama administration. But since then, there really hasn't been a serious effort in reforming our immigration system.
I asked for an army of lawyers to go down to the border to go through these asylum hearings quicker, etc. During the Trump era, I asked for the same thing during the Biden era. Biden has wanted way more judges, but not nearly enough. Now, if you're a conservative and you go, I don't want you to spend my money on judges, who needs the judges? And Trump at one point, of course, said, what are judges for anyway? Well, if you're a crook, of course you don't like judges, right? But guys, conservatives, you should want that. Why should you want it? Because right now, those asylum seekers have a legal right to be here, and their cases take about 3 to 4 years to adjudicate. That means they are staying here undocumented for that. And I know that you don't, like, you get lied to all the time, and they say, oh, there's no border, the borders are open. That's not true. They do their best that they can in maintaining the border, otherwise a lot more people would come in. And there is a process, right? And when they catch people, or they people go to the right places to say I'm seeking asylum, there's a process. And when they lose their asylum cases, they are sent back. I know that you've never heard that in right wing media your whole life, but a huge percentage of them are sent back when they lose the case. So you want the lawyers to speed up that process, both for their sake and for our sake, right? But instead, we get dumbass ideas like alligators at the border. I mean, Trump is like a Austin Powers villain. He's not even a James Bond villain. He's an Austin Powers villain. Like, can I get some snakes in a river? Why would you want the snakes in the river? And the snakes, yeah. I mean, like, he's just so painfully stupid.
So Axios had reported what Trump's policy proposals would be if he wins the 2024 presidential election. Let's give you a little taste of that. Ramping up ideological screening for people legally applying to come into the country. Ideological screening. So what does that entail exactly?
That's the most absurd thing. Can you imagine if Bernie Sanders was president and said, or any Democrat, Joe Biden, doesn't matter, and he said, we're gonna do ideological screenings at the border, Okay, what do you think the right wing reaction would be? They're only letting the communists in. We know it. They're shutting out all the right wingers because they're trying to win the elections by doing this. This is just a. But they do it willy nilly. And I guarantee you, every right winger that looks at that goes, that's right. We should discriminate and make sure we only let right wingers in. What happened to your rage about fairness and democracy and all that? Anyways, okay, but by the way, if I'm wrong, I'm happy to hear it. Then go complain to Trump and the Republicans and say, how dare you do ideological or suggest ideological screenings at the border?
They want to do this to prevent communists from coming into the country. A lot of the people that are trying to come into the country and seek asylum are Venezuelans. Pretty sure they're not coming here for communism.
They're running away from extreme socialism in Venezuela. So, but there's no logic required. All you need is gators to be a Republican.
Seeking to end birthright citizenship. I mean, what are we gonna do with this? Seeking to end birthright citizenship for children of undocumented immigrants. So where would they be citizens of if they're not citizens of the United States? Trump considered this as a president, but today's conservative leaning Supreme Court has given his team more confidence about taking on an inevitable legal fight. It's now been dubbed inevitable.
I mean, it's absurd. Look, there's already ridiculous discrimination that's not even constitutional. Oh, where if you come into the country and you're a naturalized citizen, you can't run for president. But on top of that, then Stephen Miller and the Republicans suggested naturalized citizens, should they remain citizens? And what is going to be the basis for their decision? Are you a Republican or aren't you? Will you listen to the dictator and the tyrant and do as he bids you or not? Otherwise, we're going to kick you out. Kick you out what? We're 100% US citizens. Okay, I mean, you want to talk about like, they're like with inanimate objects like guns. They're like, come and take it from my cold dead hands. Meanwhile, they're like, oh, forget like the furniture or the guns. We're going to kick you out and send you to a country that you don't even live in, haven't lived in decades, etc. And for the now, they're coming after birthright citizenship.
It's insane.
They've never lived in that other country, never in their entire lives.
They weren't born in that other country. They're not citizens of any other country. Where exactly are you expecting them to go?
They don't care about the US Constitution at all. So if you're a right winger, please stop mentioning the Constitution. You don't believe in it. So please shut your mouth about it. And you don't love America. If you're like, well, I like America if the person born here is white. But if they're not white, all of a sudden, I don't like American citizens that are born here.
I mean, certainly right wingers who subscribe to this garbage, right? And I don't think a lot of them do.
I think a lot of them do, to be honest. We could disagree about that. But I bet you a huge percentage of Republicans would be like, take away birthright citizenship from brown people. Why didn't we think of this earlier? Why do you think they're proposing it? Look, not every Republican thinks that way. But, you know, I'd love a poll on it. And it's going to be a big number.
I would love to see a poll. I have no idea. We're both guessing. But I'd like to believe that most people, including most Republican voters, don't want to see migrants, including migrant children, like treated with alligators and snakes as they're seeking asylum at the border. I mean,
minimum 30% of Republicans. I'm afraid it'll be 60.
I don't know. We're guessing. I have no idea. But please. Don't make me feel bad for having faith in people. Like, please.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. Now, extend another potential proposal from Trump, extending Texas's controversial floating barriers in the Rio Grande. So obviously that is what Cenk was referring to earlier. Apparently they looked at that model and thought, no, maybe we should extend that. And then of course, completing his border wall. A lot of people donated lot of money to Steve Bannon to complete that border wall. And he spent it on himself and you pardoned him, Trump. Why is that?
Oh, by the way, the other guys who did that scam along with him, convicted, went to prison. But keep sending money to Republicans. They'll just laugh at you, their ass off at you on the yacht that they bought with your money. And last question for you guys. If you're a Republican, you love Donald Trump. And now he tells you he's going to build a wall. Wait, didn't he say that last time? Why did it take him 3.5 years before he remembered that he was supposed to build a wall? And then you remember in the last 6 months as he's campaigning and trying to get your votes, he remembered his lie about building a wall. And all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, I meant wall. But remember, he didn't forget the corporate tax cuts. He gave them the biggest tax cut in American history. His number one priority is to the rich. He just treats the rest of you as suckers.
So there was a poll, Cenk, by The Economist and YouGov, and it showed that 60% of US adults surveyed said that the country should continue to provide citizenship to all who were born here, regardless of their parents' status. Only a quarter said that the country should not continue it, while 15% said they were not sure. Now let's get to political ideology and where Republicans stand. 42% of Republicans said they want the policy to continue, compared to 40% who said they want the policy to end.
And so I said minimum 30%. You could rewind the tape. I'm worried
they
that
heard,
it's 60.
Cenk, they heard. They heard. You were okay. Right.
I was literally going to say the number 40. Okay. So, anyways, by the way, you could take that as good news. Wow, 60% of Republicans don't want to take away constitutional rights from people that don't look like them. Okay, I'll take it as a silver lining in this story.
I have faith in you guys. Find it in your hearts to understand the situation better. And instead of taking that rage out on people who are desperate, I would say take the rage out on members of Congress who have no interest in solving this issue at all. Anyway, for now though, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about why Trump has continued to increase his support among Black and Latino voters.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. More news.
All right. Despite all of the negative coverage in regard to Donald Trump's rhetoric and in some cases policies toward Black and Latino voters, fact of the matter is he has been just increasing his support more and more. Every poll shows that he is getting more support among Black and Latino voters. In fact, there was an analysis done on this very issue in the Washington Post where they took the average of the five top quality polls on the issue, and here's what they found. Multiple polls in recent weeks have shown Trump performing historically well among Black and Hispanic voters in head-to-head matchups with Biden, helping put him neck and neck with Biden in a way he rarely was during their 2020 matchup, a point that you like to make a lot, Cenk, in regard to the, you know, basically risks the Democratic Party is taking by just going along with Biden running for re-election.
Yeah, I just want to give you guys one data point here that's that I wish I'd said all throughout. When Biden barely beat Trump in the Electoral College by 44,000 votes in 2020, on that day he had not just in polling, but in the actual results, he had a 4.5 point lead in the popular vote, 4.5 points. So when you see him trailing by a half a point to a point to Trump, understand even beating Trump by half a point isn't gonna do it. Beating him by 2 points isn't gonna do it. He needs to beat Trump by at least 4.5 points in the popular vote to win the Electoral College. He ain't anywhere near 4.5 points up on Donald Trump. So we are headed for an iceberg, and I cannot get anyone to change the direction of the ship. TYT.com/dropout to do that. Go ahead, Anna.
All right, so let's get to what the average of the polls indicate. So across five high quality polls that have broken out non-white voters in the past month, Trump is averaging, I can't even believe this, 20% of Black voters and 42% of Hispanic voters. So that's not based on one poll, that's based on an average of five separate polls. And just to give you an idea of how stunning those numbers are, no Republican presidential candidate in the last 50 years has approached receiving 20% of the Black vote. Republicans took 18% in 1972 and 16% in 1976, but they have not taken more than 12% of the Black vote since then. Okay. Now, some individual polls are even more alarming. So this is not based on an average. I want to focus on the Quinnipiac University poll, because the numbers on that one specific poll are even higher. Trump actually takes as much as 25% of black voters in a recent Quinnipiac poll and 47% of Hispanic voters in a recent CBS News poll. Numbers that would appear implausible even if those voters have trended toward him significantly. Now, this wouldn't appear to be strictly about Trump. Apparently, Fox News's pollsters just last week tested 7/20/24 Republicans against Biden, and just about every GOP candidate was near 20% support among black voters.
Yeah, ironically, the one that wasn't was Tim Scott at 15%.
Yeah, Tim Scott performed the worst among them.
Yeah.
No, there's Democrats have taken the black, especially the black vote, for granted in this country. Let's keep it 100. Okay, the rhetoric isn't enough anymore. It just isn't. When you promise that you're gonna pass a voting rights bill and then you don't even try, there are consequences for that. Biden's promise to pass a voting rights bill was tied to the two Senate runoff races in Georgia. You know who came out to vote in droves? You wanna know who did the organizing, the canvassing, the hard work on the ground necessary to get the voters to the polls to vote for the Democrats in the Senate? It was black voters, black organizers, black canvassers. The promise was that in return, they're gonna get at least a fight on a voting rights bill. He didn't even try. Okay, so when you make promises you don't keep, there are consequences for that. I mean, you should have noticed that with Obama, right? I think the Obama administration and some of their failures, their response to the 2008 economic collapse led to Trump. There were consequences for it, but apparently no one learns anything.
Yeah, so the average for the last 50 years has been Republican presidential candidates getting 9% of the black vote. So if it goes to 20%, let alone Hispanics going up to 42%, the Democrat has almost no chance of winning. Those numbers are unrecoverable. So they barely win when it's 9%. They cannot sustain 20% of black folks leaving the Democratic Party and voting for the Republican. So why is it happening? There's three main reasons. One is the what Anna just mentioned, enough with taking them for granted and never delivering on any of your promises. Look, there's tons of like not issues that are not related to race, but that still affect black people just as much as they affect anyone else that they didn't deliver on. But on voting rights, that was a very specific promise that they made. And they were adamant about that promise. And they painted it as, of course, no brainer, no question. Where there was two things that they said were like definites: voting rights and minimum wage, higher minimum wage. And those were the first two things they threw under the bus. And they did it pretty spectacularly. They didn't fight 1% for it. They immediately were like, oh, the Republicans object, then forget it. They threw it away and lit it on fire. Biden didn't do 1% fight on it. And so, by the way, they would have needed to get rid of the filibuster, but they did get rid of the filibuster to lift the debt ceiling in the first 2 years, because that was their beloved stock market. So it is unquestionable that Biden and the Democratic Party valued the stock market higher than they valued black voters that gave them that victory. So now, if Democrats in Washington see this segment, they'll want to shoot the messenger, us. They'll say, shush, shush, don't tell people what we did. Then they won't vote for us. Brother, the news is out, okay? And yeah, I'm in journalism. I tell people what actually happened, not your BS propaganda, okay? Do better, do better. Now, the other two reasons. Well, they've become elitists, both like in terms of optics and in terms of who they serve. So Trump is going around ordering people McDonald's. It's optics, it's not real. Trump's not doesn't actually deliver for anyone, but he's constantly going to the auto workers, giving just acting like he cares about the average guy. Meanwhile, Biden and the Democrats are like, we passed the semiconductor bill. Well, congrats, brother, and maybe that's necessary. But you're missing the optics and the marketing of politics, let alone the substance.
Right, no, let me jump in on that.
Okay, and then I got a third one.
Okay, so yeah, hold on that. So look, there's policy and there's politics, okay? I love policy, I kind of hate politics, right? I hate the horse race, I hate the theater, I hate the optics. But the fact of the matter is, the optics are important in winning. They just are. So when you have Donald Trump go to East Palestine, Ohio after the train derailment and look out and pretend like he's looking out for the first responders, the firefighters, when he's at McDonald's and he's saying he's gonna buy everyone a burger, right? Optically, that's perfect, okay? That's how you give people the impression that you care about them. Now, behind the scenes, you look at his policies and it was a completely different story, but it doesn't matter. People, unfortunately, oftentimes vote based on vibes. What kind of vibe do you give them? And if you give people the vibe that you care about them, that you're gonna show up, they're likely to vote for you. When it came to that train derailment, which was a huge story, Biden's the president of the United States. He couldn't even be bothered to go. He didn't go there.
And by the way, on the substance, they also totally failed. They've done no safety precautions on those railway companies since, neither Buttigieg or Biden. Why? Because those guys donate to them. So then you wonder why you're losing Black and Latino voters, because you're losing all the voters when you do things like that. And then finally, reason number three, Biden. 72% of the country says he's not gonna make it through a second term, that he's not physically healthy enough to make it through the second term. 72% is a giant number. It includes a lot of Blacks and Latinos who are just the same as the rest of us going, that brother's not gonna make it, okay? And so, but you keep shoving Biden down their throats and go, oh yeah. Did you know that if you don't vote for Biden, you're not Black? Remember, Biden said that. Biden said that to Charlemagne. Are you kidding me? So, okay, Democratic Party, it's your funeral. But the problem is, it's also our funeral. Apparently, I'm the only person in the country who actually believes that democracy is on the line and this is the most important election. Because they're not acting like it. Their numbers are awful. And what's your excuse for staying with Biden? Well, he beat Trump when he was 12 points higher and he barely beat him. That means he's definitely going to lose. Well, he is the president and everybody must bow their heads. No, on the left, you're not supposed to bow your head. Now he's lost minorities or lost enough of them that it's unrecoverable. But guys, you like the iceberg, go ahead and run right into it. For the rest of you, tyt.com/dropout. I don't know, I'm desperate. Let's make this, let's try to put pressure on this guy to drop out, because this ain't gonna get it done. So when you get President Trump, I guarantee you they blame us. But you see the numbers ahead of time, a year ahead of time. You could shoot the messenger, but the reality is this is the message being delivered by America, including now Black and Latino voters.
All right, when we come back for the second hour of the show, we're gonna discuss the latest in the auto worker strike and how Nikki Haley, a Republican presidential candidate, feels about them. Come back and I'll give you the details.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.